Hi listeners, I'm Ashlyn and this is Molt, and I want to welcome you to a special episode that considers the fate of farm animals in today's food system and society. In this episode, my sister Amelia and I bring you to Indiana's first farm animal sanctuary called Uplands Peak, where a small group of dedicated humans make sure that every animal rescued from our food system lives a full life. Whether you're a vegan, vegetarian, or meat eater, I hope this episode prompts new ideas about our relationships with animals and the unique individuality of every animal and their capacity to experience joy, love, grief, and suffering. At any given moment, more than 25 billion animals are living in small cages awaiting slaughter. A select few of these animals are rescued from this system and brought to sanctuaries. They live freely and have the opportunity to express their preferences and personalities and live comfortable into old age. It's amazing to witness and makes it all the more difficult to reckon with the cruelty that defines the lives of the majority of animals. I have so much admiration for the humans who create these sanctuaries. It is hard, manual work, expensive, time-consuming, and can be emotionally draining. They rely on philanthropy and volunteers, which is why, as you'll hear, the disruptions of the pandemic were so devastating for many animal sanctuaries. Still, the people I've met who do this work are some of the most committed, big-hearted, yet tough people I've known, which is why I want to do what I can to help them out. My sister and I visited Peak last fall, and it made a huge impression on us. In this episode, we've tried our best to bring that experience to you. We start with a mini farm tour so you can meet some of the residents of the sanctuary, followed by a conversation with Christy, the president of Peak's board, reflecting on Peak's mission and work. We hope you enjoy this.
We are Indiana's first farmed animal sanctuary. Historically, we were established in 2011 and took in our first two residents who you'll meet today, Annie and Andy, in 2012.
Every 3 months, we pick out the group that we're going to do, and it's we weigh them, we check their ears, we check their wattles and their crown, we check their toes, we go ahead and clip their nails, we check their preen.
So they have that caregiving as well as freedom to do what feels natural to them. Dust baths, that's a key one for birds to feel like a natural connection to the earth.
Yeah.
When we head back out to the wooded area and even closer to the barn for our older pig individuals, having plenty of like mud holes to bathe in.
Yeah.
As I'll say, sanctuaries are a wonderful place. Like, it's a great place for vegans to come because it is that escape from the challenges that we face in a world that's not primarily vegan.
Did you find
You want a popsicle?
No, I found
myself.
Oh.
You must be in a good dream or
something. Yeah, I love Lucy's marking. I can tell it's her. She's got kind of her own eyeshadow.
Yeah.
She is really good friends with Tula.
We gotta find him, I feel like. It's a mission. Because he really is endearing. You should meet him.
The pigs really generally hang out with the goats.
The birds kind of, I would say, the turkeys kind of free roam wherever they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And then the roosters and the hens kind of hang out among themselves more. So Pip and Potter, those two individuals came here when they were tiny piglets. And now look at how big and beautiful he is.
Here he comes, Mr. Pip!
He loves snacks.
Look at those eyes.
And he's sweet.
All right,
hop on.
We're going to make this kind of like a
hay ride.
Ride, if you will.
Ooh, yes. Like, you can tell how much work it is, to put together this whole operation and keep it going. But then you see, like, what this life can be.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, whatever, one in millions that get, you know, this chance.
So Annie and Andy were our first two residents ever at Indiana's first farmed animal sanctuary.
This is Andy. God.
Yes. For our pig residents here, I consider it's like the older adult population of pigs. Their mobility isn't as much as maybe, say, the folks who are out in the woods that you just saw.
Hi there.
Hi, Zane.
You want a popsicle? good.
Hi.
You've been to a sanctuary before. That first time you can connect with an animal that you saw in a different lens before in your life, it is truly life-changing.
Oh, absolutely.
Amelia and I had an incredible time on the tour. If any of you are in Indiana, I highly recommend taking a trip down to experience the place. After the tour, we sat down with Christy to hear more about her journey into this work and into veganism, as well as some of the stories of the animal individuals that were featured on the tour. You'll also hear about some ways you can get involved, so stay tuned. Just to begin, can you just start by introducing yourself and how you got involved with PEAK and a little bit about the mission of PEAK?
You got it. So my name is Christy Todd. I am the president of the board of directors here at Uplands PEAK. I've been involved with PEAK. I was introduced to the organization in 2016. I was a brand new vegan at the time and looking for ways to connect with animals in a way that I have not had the opportunity to before, when I saw them more as food and not in the way that the lens that I have now that they're here with us on the earth among us. So being from the Chicago area, I kept my search kind of closer regionally, and I found Uplands PEAK here in Indiana. PEAK started in a small town called Salem and was on a property of about 22 acres, and it was in the middle of animal agriculture. I remember on my first trip there, I saw Tyson sheds where birds would be housed in factory farming. So I found it really inspiring and powerful that PEAK existed in that region of space, and recognizing that this organization stemmed from the need in Indiana that nobody had really had a sanctuary for rescued farmed animals before. If you think about what PEAK means, it's people, earth, animals, and kinship. So if you break that down, really, that's a way that I want to align my life and my values. So that really struck with me at that time as well. So in learning about this great organization, I returned back home to Chicago and continued my activism in various ways, whether that was outreach on the street, conversations, even perhaps a disruption or two, and part of the SAVE movement, as well as vigils for animals at the end of their lives. But I find that supporting rescued animals, individuals, I know I use the word animals, but I look at them as individuals. Sometimes people, and I get a look sometimes that you said you call them people. I'm like, well, they're experienced sentients like you and I are, so yes. But I recognize that this is truly a fantastic way to be active in the liberation movement for, and I say liberation for animals and anyone who feels oppressed is where I try to stem, where I see there's a lot of parallels among humans and animals in many ways. So this is where I've directed my activism now for animals. And so in 2018, Uplands PEAK did a campaign called Be Bold and recognized the opportunity that there would be to move to a place that would have more human individuals to help the mission. So if right where we're sitting right now, this town is called Freedom, Indiana. So if that
Amazing.
Doesn't stand out, so in finding a great property to help that, you know, bring the individuals we were caring for then and open up to rescuing more individuals in need. So that campaign, that fundraising campaign helped get us to where we are here, which is between Bloomington, Indiana, which is close to Indiana University, or part that is where Indiana University is, and nearby Indianapolis as well. So we thought it was a good central location to invite more humans to a space like Uplands PEAK. This tour, and I'm so grateful to have this day here with you guys.
Yes, thank you.
As far as my background, that's how I found PEAK. I relocated with my family in 2019 from Chicago to better involve myself in the organization. And in my day job, I'm also a nurse, so I've cultivated both of my passions in life of helping animals and people. And so that's how I got here. And not long after I arrived, I served as the volunteer coordinator, and we had really very involved volunteer program where we had work days that were filling up and I'd have to invite people back. And then the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
And that really impacted our organization in a way. In order to protect the individuals we care for and the small animal care team we have on site, we really had to pause our volunteer program. We had to pause any on-site visitation. And so that was a really challenging time for the organization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm grateful to be here with you today because we are able to safely reintroduce people to come and visit the sanctuary and connect with individuals like Agatha and Pip and Erica, who you gave a belly rub to today.
Yes, yes.
This is what brings us joy, and part of our mission is to connect people with the earth and animals, that we are here together.
It's incredibly encouraging for us, especially coming back to Indiana, to see this work going on. And it's been, you know, it's been a wild couple of years for everybody. And I like to think that in the kind of reconnection with nature that a lot of people experienced during the pandemic, that there is a little bit, you know, this maybe is a good moment for, you know, this movement to grow. So, and it's awesome to see it happening in the Midwest. I'm curious, and Amelia, you jump in as well. You became vegan, and that's what prompted you to get more involved in animal rights work, animal liberation. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what prompted you to become vegan, and then building on that, what you see at the sanctuary, what's bringing people here.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I like hearing other people's vegan stories as well, so thanks for asking me.
Yeah.
I have a wonderful son who, at a very young age, when we were sitting down to dinner one evening, he asked my spouse and I, he said, "Mom, Dad, what is this that we were serving him?" And ultimately, after we peeled away the layers, we said, "Well, that's a cow." And right away, Will's like, "Why would we eat a cow? I don't want to do that." So from that moment, my husband and I needed to make that decision of, well, I don't want to distress my child. We love him, and clearly that's upsetting for him. So he was on a vegetarian path innately from his awareness.
And yeah.
My husband and I continued to eat the standard American diet and continue down our path. About 4 years after that, other family members who are interested in animal welfare. So if you can think about Ringling Brothers and protests we did to help advocate or elevate voices for elephants, for example. My son wanted to go to one of those protests, and I said, "Well, I don't know about that." I said, "I better go along with you, like it's at night,
yeah,
and I don't know what's going to happen. Are you going to get like heckled there?" Or I wanted to protect him. So I went to this Ringling Brothers protest in the Chicago area in Rosemont, and I met vegans, which I was like, I've never really ever met anyone who identified as being vegan. And learning a little bit about why we were there, and so recognizing that, look what happens to elephants and how we exploit that species of animal. Then your mind unfolds to, well, what about other animals in the circus? Yeah. What about them and what we're doing and what they're experiencing? And then that goes further. Oh my goodness, what do we do with animals that we consider food?
And
how they're exploited. And if my head didn't pop off visually, it did emotionally for me at that moment. And from there, I went home with an intention to learn everything that I could. I still to this day feel that the best speech you'll ever hear by Gary Yourofsky is really what sealed the deal for me. You can find that on YouTube for free, anyone who's listening. But really, when you listen to the standard discussion about why animals are here for us and not with us, I could not reconcile any of that anymore.
Yeah.
It was really just like it
awakening.
It just, yeah, the veil is lifted and you realize like this is truly how we're here to exist. And if you want to live a life of, you know, minimizing harm and cultivating compassion, like I couldn't continue to do that, exploiting animals for food or clothing or products that I would use in my life and my home, for example. So that's really where that journey began for me, and was able to cultivate to fully vegan relatively quickly. Being a nurse by day, I of course wanted to look at what the nutritional value would be of different foods, and so that was fun to explore, and recognizing all of the good things that help nourish our bodies from plants.
Yeah.
And then learning, like you guys have probably heard the metaphor of like, look at some of the mightiest animals that are out there, like the gorilla or the elephant. What do they eat?
Exactly.
Plants, something. Yeah. There's something to that. So my activism began really when that veil is lifted, there's a lot of hurt that can occur, you know, based on you trying to come to terms with how you've been living your life a long time.
Yeah.
And so I tried to channel that in helping educate others about what I had learned. And so that had translated to different activist events like, you know, a march, a protest, a disruption in a grocery store, Cube of Truth for Anonymous for the Voiceless. I really liked talking with other people, hearing where they're coming from, respecting that, but also elevating voices of animals. I do now believe they're not voiceless. They definitely do have a voice, and we're here to help amplify them.
Yeah.
So that was very much a part of my life, that type of activism. But then that, again, brings me back to where I am here, because when you meet individuals like you did today, they need advocacy. Mm-hmm. They need volunteers to come and help take care of them. They need people who understand the medical needs that they have. Being on the board of directors, one of my primary focuses, not only in outreach to others and letting everyone know who we are, but in order to continue our operations to care for them, we have to raise funds and help people be aware of how they can help as well.
Right.
So that now I've transitioned from the volunteer coordinator role to more of that fiduciary responsibility for the organization.
Yeah.
And getting to do tours with individuals who want to come and learn more about us, that probably is my favorite thing.
I'm sure so many inspiring stories come out of that. Yeah.
So people come visit here at different stages. You were asking a little bit about that. So we had a take a peek tour today where the two individuals were vegan, and they've already kind of, they were eager to come and see a sanctuary and be amongst individuals that you saw here today. We've had different events where maybe an individual brings a friend or a family member that isn't necessarily there yet. They might be curious and open to it, or they may be like, I'm here because I'm here with my partner. So I've seen various stages of that. There's always been respectful correspondence with folks. As you went around the sanctuary today, there are bits of education we have in different areas like the coops or the barn, where people in a non-threatening way can learn about individuals that they met and what they are treated like in animal agriculture. So people have that knowledge when they come here. And so planting that seed, I think, is just as important. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't leave vegan that day, and that's okay. But maybe they've awakened to something that they had no idea about before. I have had the fortune of seeing families come with young children. Since we've opened up for Take a Peek tours, it's been magnificent to see children connect. And I remember one of the children's parents said, like, I don't believe in zoos and taking my child to be among animals in that type of setting. This is fantastic. I can come here with my family. I've seen a family with adult children come here, and they were so excited to come and be together on a day out as a family that way. I've seen people come here on a date together, which is so exciting.
I think it's a pretty cool date.
It's a very cool date. This is how I like to spend a Saturday, you know?
Yeah.
So it's been really exciting to see various stages of where people are at and meet them where they're at and then cultivate conversation from there.
It reminds me, I've been reading Empty Cages, and they talk about how different people come to veganism. And, you know, they talk about children. A lot of children have just kind of that innate, like, what are we doing here? Yeah. And then, you know, society kind of normalizes meat eating. But for a lot of people, it's just having, you know, these different touch points that suddenly, like, the light bulb moment happens. And, yeah, I'm sure this place goes a long way in helping people in that journey.
I know you were kind of just talking about your outreach work that you've been doing, but, like, in terms of specifically in the area, how can people get involved with PEAK and what kind of volunteer opportunities, I guess, you guys have here?
Thank you for asking. That's great. Yeah. So we do offer regular volunteer opportunities where you would come to PEAK. You would be paired with one of our animal care team members and get onboarded to different tasks. And so that could be as fun as scooping poop, which as a nurse is not foreign to me, so I'll dive in anytime for that. Cleaning coops, perhaps helping with, like you see today, we actually have a renovation happening through our fundraising efforts to improve our barn drainage. So everyone that you saw here, except with the exception of two animal care team members, it's their shift and they're working today, but everyone else that's here is volunteering their time. One of our volunteers comes here in gardens. We need help with landscaping. So if you like riding a mower or weed eating, come on out. We could use that help. The group Veg IU through Indiana University, typically they come out about once a month as a group to work on some volunteer projects. So for example, that might be helping either build or paint one of the coops as an example. So those are some more common ways to get involved. If people are interested in advocacy, we're always looking for help with grant writing, because everything that we do here at Uplands Peak is through donations. Yep. We are a 501c3 organization that we are able to operationalize the care of everyone here through donations.
Yep.
So I invite people to come out and volunteer in those ways. If you're interested in work on board of directors, we look to recruit throughout the year for board of directors. And a really cool opportunity that I don't speak about very often, but absolutely exists, is we have internships. So, for example, we had Rachel and Ann spend about 2 months with us this summer. They just finished because folks are heading back to school soon. But they learned about nonprofit work. They learned about animal care. They learned about sustainability. And they're able to take those skills with them wherever they're going. I've seen folks who are interested in veterinary medicine that will come here as an internship, for example, mm-hmm. and learn how to be around animals, plans of care, and they also get the message of what we have here. It's kind of a win-win.
Yeah.
And when you have an internship here with us, we actually will house you here. We have bedrooms all upstairs, so you can live on site for free. And have this work experience with us. So I like to encourage that we do offer internships, and that information is on our website.
Well, I know we got to do the tour with you and meet some of the individuals, but I'd love if you could maybe talk or tell the story of a couple of the individuals that we met today, or how you find them and what it's like when they arrive here.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Who do I begin with? Okay, I'm going to try to be as concise as I can. So I want to talk about the experience about meeting Star and Frida. Those individuals are two of our cows that actually live in the front pasture of the property. They've made an impact on my life. So there is an incredible organization called Destination Liberation, and that's led by Jason Bollock. And he helps to liberate baby calves from dairy and find them homes at sanctuaries. And so he came upon Star and Frida at a small dairy operation in New England and was looking for a forever home for them. At that time, Star and Frida were chained in a small barn. Their mother was across the barn, also chained, and they would cry for each other and couldn't have contact because we were going to use mom's milk for people to make dairy products. At that point, the farmer was willing to surrender Star and Frida to Destination Liberation, and he brought them to Uplands Peak when they were only weeks old. So that is bittersweet because you see that you want them to be with their mother. That was not going to be a possibility in this life for them right now. So then we jumped in to be those surrogates for them. So they actually grew up here from the very beginning. So we bottle fed them, we nurtured them, we helped them feel safe and loved and secure. And that took a community of people, like volunteers you see here. And it's incredible to see them to this day be strong and independent and trusting of people. Yeah. It was a little strange to have to go to like a place like Tractor Supply and buy formula for them when they really should be having their own mother's milk.
Yeah.
That was kind of challenging to say the least, but we knew that some of the work that we're doing is giving them the safety that they deserve. Mm-hmm. And then again, I said that they're not voiceless. They're able to share their story. We help share their stories. So people learn that that's where they came from. Yeah. So that's Star and Frida. Agatha, who you met at the very entrance, they're kind of our welcoming group, I feel like, when people come to the main house here. So Agatha was rescued with other fellow hens from an animal agriculture accident. And what can happen is if there's, say, a tornado or a flood, oftentimes a factory farming operation will, you know, collect insurance and rebuild from there. But typically the individuals that remain there typically anguish, die, unfortunately, and they're considered collateral damage. When these events occur throughout the country, the activists will, if they learn about those, will try to go and rescue as many individuals as possible. So we did get a call here at Peak to say we've got a group of these hens that we really are looking for homes that will take the best care of them, and they need some vetting and help. And at that time, we were able to have space for them to come here. And Agatha, who I sponsor each month because she's just so special to me, she represents resilience. She had really significant wounds and an injury on her foot. We took her to an avian vet in the local Indianapolis area, and we went from them recognizing her to like, well, you should probably euthanize. She probably won't have a very good quality of life. It looks too far gone. To through all of her therapy and treatment and dedication to allowing her to, we promised to try to give her the best life that we could. And that treatment ended with her losing a toe. But as you saw, she is mobile and exploring her world with her friends and overcame that. Mm-hmm. And the individuals that cared for her in that clinic really stepped away with, wow, this chicken is really an interesting individual, and you really cared enough to help her heal, and wow, her foot's better.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. So that advocacy that Agatha did on her own, I just think she's amazing. And then I'll tell you about one more if I have time for one more.
Sure. Okay.
So you had the opportunity to meet Pip, one of our pigs that live out in their summer wooded area back here in the Peak property. And Pip and his friend Potter came to Uplands Peak in the fall winter of 2018 from a rescue of 42 baby piglets that were underweight and were going to be basically euthanized because they weren't of weight to sell for food. So this brave woman came and said, can I take them? And the farmer's like, if you can take them before 8 o'clock tomorrow, they're yours, otherwise they're gone. And she brought all of these 42 individuals home and said, okay, they're safe. They're basically like in her property, in her yard. It's like, now I have to figure out what I can do to take care of them and give them the best life. So a question came up of how do people find out about opportunities? A lot of time it's through word of mouth and through reputable organizations that, you know, demonstrate that we care for animals in a way that's, you know, aligned with veganism. So they connected with us here at Uplands Peak, and one of our board directors, Allison Hess, got in her car, drove out to North Carolina, brought Pip and Potter here to their forever home where they are loved and cared for and live life on their own terms. And as you saw, Pip is a very warm, loving, talkative individual. And it is a bit of a hot day here at Peak right now. I think we're probably in the low 90s, something like this. So they are kind of lounging around in the shade. But earlier this morning when it was cooler and we had a tour here that I was hosting, he followed us all around to make sure that we saw everybody out there, like Lucy and Tulip and Hank that were out there. So he very much likes to engage with humans and his fellow pig friends alike. It's really beautiful to see relationships among the individuals that live here. Just like humans, we have our friends and our family and maybe, you know, the brother, sister I need my space from right now. We see the same things in the relationships with the individuals here. So it's really something beautiful to witness every day. Thank you.
I guess kind of touching on some of the things that you just shared and the reality of, you know, where a lot of these individuals come from. I think, you know, one thing that's challenging getting into this work is just realizing how much there is to do. And, you know, for us, you know, sometimes it's just starting with a family member and trying to share that. What I've experienced here today is just there's so much joy and optimism and hope. And, you know, I think that's so, so important. But I wanted to ask you, like, what is most challenging about this work, and how do you think about the big work ahead and how to, you know, kind of day by day work toward that?
Thank you for that question. And I want to, before I begin, say thank you for expressing what you felt here today. That almost brought me to tears because...
Yeah, me too.
We want to continue to foster more and more and more of that. What we learned, I feel like, from my perspective, during the pandemic, it was really challenging because it takes a lot of, when I use that word, resilience, to care for people, to care for the individuals here. When we weren't closed off from the community, but we were protecting, everyone was kind of in their quarantines and protecting themselves, and so that wasn't unique to us. So what I learned is how important it is to take care of the humans that do this work as well, because like you said, it can be challenging. It's challenging as a vegan, number one, emotionally, when you see exploitation of animals. So that cultivated with, you know, our community got smaller for a little while, and who can we rely on to have that support with each other? That was difficult. And I know it was difficult in your lives too, and anyone who's listening to this. So that resilience of, I love you, we're going to get through this together, what do you need? We really focused inward on the care of our animal care team and volunteers, because from there we can build our strength to be able to do the work that needs to get done every day to care for everyone. So there are times where everybody's great, everybody's healthy, and there are times where there's, you know, residents that have health issues that might all need attention at the same time, and there's, you know, runs to the vet, there's runs to get medication or feed, and there's a lot, like, there's just a lot of demand for a small core group of people. So I'm grateful when you say, how are there ways that people can help? Thank you for asking that question today, because we need that help. and for your podcast of who you're speaking to, and you're going to speak to other organizations, they need that help too. Thank you for being interested in this movement and trying to help others be aware of who's out here trying to do this work. And it does take a community to do that. We get asked often about how do you choose when to bring residents here? And we have to make that decision with great intention, because our hearts say we'd want to rescue as many people that need a home as possible. We recognize that that takes resources financially, mentally, physically. So we do that with great deliberation when we say it's time to bring, or it's okay to, you know, welcome someone else in, because when we commit to them, it is for their life. So we are rebuilding after the time of the pandemic, making sure our animal care team is strong, make sure that we have the community of support that would allow us to continue to bring in more individuals. So we're going to do that when the time feels right. There are requests that happen often, and all other sanctuaries are facing the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, again, thank you so, so much for today.
Thank you.
I'm really happy to know about Uplands Peak now, and I look forward to, you know, volunteering or supporting you and just spreading the word as much as possible.
Thank you for the opportunity to have you here today and have this discussion. Yeah. I really appreciate you both.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a beautiful visit.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Christy. Before we go, I wanted to bring us back to the central idea behind MOLT, which is really focused on grief and how we confront or don't confront death in our lives. And that includes species beyond humans. On the tour, when we were visiting some of the senior residents at Peak, we heard about one of the pig individuals named Brandy, who had lived and then died while at Peak. And Christy told us a little bit about what that experience was like. So as you listen to this last story of Brandy, I hope you can also think about how special and how rare it is for animals to have a peaceful death like this. Thank you so much for listening.
So Isaac and Erica, and they had a sister, Brandy, who came together, the three of them, when they were about 8 months old from an animal neglect case. Mm. And they've lived here, I mean, so they're 9 years old now.
Wow.
When it was time for their sister to pass, like, she, I would say, lived as a nurse, especially, like, she lived many months of palliative care where she was, gave her snacks, we gave her things for pain, like gabapentin or tramadol, which humans take for joint pain and neuropathic pain.
Yep.
We had a wonderful New Year's Eve here where we had one of our IU PhD students, she was a volunteer, came and played music for the residents, and we had her all cuddled up in a blanket, and the concert was, I feel like, just for her. But we give everyone every effort that we can at the best quality of life possible. If someone is apparently suffering, we don't want someone to needlessly continue to suffer for simply keeping them present on the earth. So that was a very hard thing for our team, because we had never seen one of our pig individuals go. So.
How did they do with her passing?
So we did offer opportunity for individuals to come and see her. Like, we had a blanket around her so they could sense that she was gone. And I feel like, you know, Brandy was living not in isolation, but she didn't have people around her all the time. Like, we would have the pigs and the goats come near her a little bit each day, but otherwise she kind of wanted to keep to herself, probably because she felt uncomfortable and didn't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
So it was my impression they did come and say goodbye, but then were able to move on because she had been kind of low mobility for a bit.
Yeah.
Now watch this. This is how Isaac likes his water.
To keep up with MOLT, subscribe to this podcast and sign up for my newsletter at ashlyn.substack.com. Thanks so much for listening.